Hello and welcome to Undercurrent News. My name is Jan Lepetun. I'm CEO at Undercurrent News here. And with me is Matt Kreis. He's our contributing author and consultant in the seafood industry. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Matt is also a producer of a six-part report series, Aquaculture Frontiers, and we have just published the fifth part of it, Aquaculture Finance. We're going to discuss today some of the key findings of the report and unpack some of the financial instruments fueling the growth of aquaculture. Matt, before we begin, I have to say the report has been a bestseller, even though we published it just before the start of the festive season, just before Christmas. So there's clearly a lot of interest in aquaculture finance. Why do you think that's the case?
I think it's the industry's key theme. The industry right now has to move further offshore and it has to move onto land. If you take the salmon industry, near shore sites are used up. Other species have other challenges. But this industry has to convince the finance sector to lend money. And traditionally, it struggled with that. One of the key people that we interviewed, Rabobank's Gorjan Nikolic, the main analyst for the seafood sector, explains aquaculture as being an industry of two parts or different groups. So you have this super profitable salmon industry that is fully engaged with the financial industry, although that's been a slightly turbulent relationship. And the rest of the industry, which is largely locked out of financial markets. So getting the rest of the industry on side is a massive challenge for the industry.
So let me just grab the bull by the horns and ask the question that I guess everybody cares about. Is there money to be made in aquaculture?
Yes, there is, absolutely. As part of this study, we ran a statistical analysis of equity returns, and we looked at how companies have performed over the last year and also over the last 5 years. The salmon industry has made investors a lot of money. It's been a fabulous stock to own since 2016. And in the case of Norway, I think even previous to that. But the amount of profit that's been generated since 2016, you can record it pretty much from the start of the algal blooms, which reduced supply from Chile. The returns have just been extraordinary. And if you compare that with the rest of the industry, it's not even comparable. Curiously enough, the only other equity sector, the aquaculture species that has delivered returns to shareholders over that period is the Vietnamese pangasius industry. And everything else has been pretty lousy.
Okay, right. You mentioned equity funding. Tell us a bit more about the variety of financing instruments available in aquaculture currently.
Sure. Again, it's really important to distinguish between the salmon industry and everything else, because there's just such a huge gap between the two. The salmon industry is benefited from banks such as DNB and Nordea in the Nordic region and Rabobank, which have spent or been engaged with the industry for decades and understand the salmon industry super well and lend them money. In the case of DNB and Rabobank, those two banks have actually followed their clients overseas and will lend them money for operations or assets that they own overseas. And in the case of DNB, DNB has expanded to Chile as well. So Chile is the second largest salmon farming country behind Norway, has DNB and Rabobank. And those two banks are very active in lending the Chilean salmon sector money. When you go beyond salmon, there are very few instances of those types of banks lending money to the sector. Vietnam is an outlier. Their financial industry has to a certain extent financed projects. But I think a really telling example is the only major recirculating aquaculture system in the world, which is Atlantic Sapphire, which is being built right now and has reached $1 billion in market cap on the Norwegian Merkur Exchange. That was financed almost entirely by Nordic Finance and not US banks. And we're talking about a project that's being built on the outskirts of Miami. The big question that both myself and Undercurrent in its news coverage asked last year was if this huge wealth being accumulated by private equity giants will get into aquaculture. And we've seen some private equity money coming into the sector. Bain Capital, a very big US private equity firm, bought Nova Austral, a Chilean salmon farmer, in 2015. And also we saw private equity funding the creation of a bigger sea bass and sea bream group in Andromeda Group, which got their European Union clearance late last year. And that could that company could act as a consolidator in that industry. So things are changing, but slowly.
Well, speaking about the M&A activity, it's obviously quite vibrant. Do you think this is something we should expect will go on at the current rate?
Absolutely. There have been very significant M&A deals, especially in salmon, in the last year or two. We saw big movements in the Chilean salmon industry. AgroSuper, which is a huge poultry and pork and meat protein giant in Chile, bought up Aqua Chile, which was already the largest Chilean salmon farmer, and created a global top five salmon farming company with much broader scope than anything we've seen from Chile. And then we saw shortly afterwards a big Chinese conglomerate in Legend Holdings coming into BioAustralis Seafoods. So there's very significant consolidation in this industry. And of course, let's not forget Bakkafrost coming in to buy Scottish salmon and creating a leader in kind of premium salmon. Then we've seen as well M&A in other sectors, and we're starting to see M&A in the shrimp industry, curiously enough. You look at long-term investors like Japan's Mitsui, taking a stake in Vietnam's largest producer, Minfu, and even looking at the largest producer in Ecuador, Santa Priscila. So it does pose the question of if these companies are looking at the shrimp industry as the right time to invest and picking up assets at bargain valuations.
Speaking of which, what sort of debt packages normally back up that sort of deals? Do we see more bank lending or bonds?
The bond market, the aquaculture hasn't really tapped the bond market to any great degree. We identified three or four bonds, which were all the Nordic bond market, which is a very sizable bond market. So you have Moi and if I'm not mistaken, Osterwall, which owns part of Leroy. And the outlier in the bond market is Nova Austral, which is the Chilean company owned by private equity groups. Nova Austral had an extremely challenging year last year where mortalities were misreported at one of their sites, which caused a little bit of a scandal, and the bond price has tanked. In that sense, I think actually Nova Austral is a very interesting case to follow in terms of, you know, will the door be open for other aquaculture farmers to go to the Nordic bond market? So that's a really key thing. Generally, again, the broad trend is with salmon. Salmon's profitable. Banks are willing to lend this sector more money. Just this week, Multi Export Foods, which is partly owned by Mitsui, it's a Chilean salmon farmer, renegotiated a big revolving credit facility with DNB and Rabobank, and that's kind of the trend. So it's, for salmon, it's a good moment. For the other companies, it's extremely challenging. When you look at India, the largest shrimp exporter to the US, there is actually a shadow bank crisis in India. And that's actually really complicating some of these producers, the exporters, that are already in a tough moment with tough prices. and it's affected some of these guys' revolving credit facilities, and there's some tough negotiations to come at the start of this year. If you look at other places like Vietnam, it's a mixed situation. The banks have been burned by one or two bad situations. So there has been appetite in the past for financing Pangasius farmers and big groups. So that might continue, but it's not like the salmon industry.
So moving away from the salmon industry, which are the next hottest species, do you think?
It's an interesting question. The shrimp industry seems to be miles away from being bankable or insurable in its current form. A lot of the market experts that we speak to say that the shrimp industry has to move to indoor farming models or find a different model where it can convince its stakeholders that it can control a lot of the disease issues that really concern the industry. I think in actual fact, one of the key interviews that we had in the report and has been an undercurrent story is with the French insurance group AXA. The AXA, which specializes, has a unit of its business that specializes in aquaculture, told us that salmon industry is very insurable. There's high penetration. They like sea bass and sea bream. There's a good level of insurance in that industry. And essentially, they won't touch shrimp in its current form. Curiously, one of the industries that they like is tilapia. And they think that the tilapia industry has the reliability in terms of supply chain that could actually be insured. And tilapia is an industry that's quite interesting because although demand has been dropping in the key US market, it's actually really taking off globally. And there's money and investment going into that species. And a lot of industry aquaculture experts have always said that tilapia is a really great species and you could see more of that.
I think all you are saying and what you described in the report only highlights to me the fact that the seafood industry is really, really fragmented and it's really a collection of various segments. So perhaps it will be a mistake to think of it as a one unified industry, since, as you mentioned, various financial instruments work better for various species.
You're absolutely right. It's a really fragmented industry, both in terms of species and also geographically as well. Asia's been one of most aquaculture tonnage comes from Asia, but there's very little involvement with lenders in that region. Mm-hmm. And that really has to change. I think one of the really important trends that we haven't really discussed, but it is worth mentioning, is the role of impact investors, early finance groups or stakeholders, and startup capital and venture capital that could find ways of making the aqua industry more insurable and more bankable. There's a huge movement in these groups. There's a lot of family offices that are interested in investing in food systems. The aquaculture is really part of a broader ag tech movement. And the ag tech movement I would describe as many people describe as the $1 trillion industry that hasn't been disrupted as yet by digitalization and AI and so forth. And I think there's going to be a wall of money that's coming into the food industry as a whole. And some of that will come into aquaculture. So I'd really look at groups that are involved in startup challenges, venture capitalists, impact investors that are really interested in this sector. Some of those are these kind of ocean-based funds, which we're seeing more of. I think they will have a really key role in developing this sector. And together with this report that we've written on aquaculture frontiers, I would also really recommend our listeners to look out for a report that was published by the Nature Conservancy and Encourage Capital, which is one of these groups, And they wrote an excellent report as well on how to develop or how aquaculture can be sustainably financed.
Excellent. Can you give us a couple examples of how technology and finance play together to disrupt the seafood sector? I know you have a whole chapter on blockchain, for instance, in your report.
Yeah. But blockchain, as part of this report, we spoke to a group of key actors. And one of those key actors was the IBM Food Trust and the person that's in charge of creating a big blockchain ledger that will transform the food industry. I attended the GOAL conference in Chennai, India, late last year. And the representative from Walmart said that this technology being developed by IBM is going to have a huge impact on the seafood industry and this very, very fragmented supply chain that the seafood industry entails. And so we went to the IBM, the head of this initiative, and talked about specific examples of how this technology can improve the seafood industry. And really, there could be a huge impact. So reporting mortality data, having sensory equipment automatically uploading information onto the blockchain, and just generating statistics that can give both investors and the major retailers that buy this seafood confidence in these supply chains. So again, a lot of automation, AI, these things can make a real difference to this industry.
Sounds exciting. So in 5-10 years time, the whole industry will look different, I guess.
Yeah, actually, one of the comments from the SINTEF, which is a Norwegian research group, one of their key people who are working on offshore technology said, in 10 years' time, the aquaculture supply chain will be unrecognizable compared with what it looks like today. And I thought that was a really revealing comment. If you look at some of these designs and offshore platforms and land-based farms that are being proposed, and some of them are being financed, that seems to be the way it's going. Big transformation in supply systems.
Well, yeah, all of those technological disruptions, they obviously do require funding, and it's very fortunate that you have written a whole report on it. To my knowledge, no one has ever written a report specifically about aquaculture finance. Producing a report like this was an enormous enterprise. Just tell us what it takes to produce a report like that.
Right, sure. It's really, so we've spent pretty much a year and a half writing Aquaculture Frontiers series. And as report number 5, or what was originally intended to be the last report in the series, we always envisaged the finance report coming at the end, because it was going to be probably the most difficult one to write. And we wanted to get the perspective of all of the stakeholders that we've spoken to for each report. Some of those reports were kind of species specific. So, and in each report, we've spoken to dozens of industry actors and protagonists. And so we were able to canvas their opinions on what the finance space looks like. Just at the end, in the latter half of last year, we really started to kind of zone in on lenders and people who would give us their side of the story. So we ended up with as you say, I think a report that gives you insight that you haven't really seen before about the aquaculture industry and this key challenge that they have now of getting lenders on side and getting them to finance this transformation that's badly needed to convince customers that their seafood is safe and reliable and fresh and so forth.
Well, fantastic. Congrats on it, on this big achievement. I think at this point, I will have to let you go to work on the last installment of the Aquaculture Frontiers series. And I look forward to chatting again to you.
Sure. And Jan, just as you mentioned that, We decided to add one more report, which is on offshore offshore aquaculture, because we just felt like there was so much happening in what can be classified as marine aquaculture, and a lot of new species that we just hadn't really addressed in the previous reports that we felt just actually deserved a report on it by itself. So that's number six, and we'll be releasing that quite soon.
Hopefully it does get our readers and listeners even more excited, as they say, watch this space. As always, if you would like to know more and have more details, go to www.undercurrentnews.com/reports or just shoot us an email. Speak later. Bye.
Thanks very much. Bye.